Wetware Media presents The Art and Skill of Buddhist Meditation, Mindfulness, Concentration, and Insight. Written by Richard Shankman and narrated by Alan Taylor. Copyright 2016 by Richard Shankman. This recording is copyright 2016 by Wetware Media. For more information about Wetware Media and to browse more mindfulness and meditation audiobooks, please visit wetwaremedia.com. That's WETWAREMEDIA.com. Publisher's note: this audiobook is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is sold with the understanding that the publisher is not engaged in rendering psychological, financial, legal, or other professional services. If expert assistance or counseling is needed, the services of a competent professional should be sought. Introduction. Perhaps nothing is more emblematic of Buddhism than the image of a monk in silent meditation. With closed eyes and attention inward drawn, it evokes in us a sense of wisdom, peace, and calm. Ever since the Buddha's great awakening and discovery of a long-forgotten path to inner peace and happiness, meditators have followed in his footsteps. Ordinary people just like us have undertaken the same practices that have been handed down throughout the centuries. They have seen for themselves the treasures these teachings might hold in their own lives. We can realize the peace and happiness the Buddha discovered 2,500 years ago. This book is a travel guide along that same path to inner peace, meditation as it has been preserved and taught in the Theravada tradition of Buddhism. Theravada means school of the elders and is the oldest living Buddhist tradition, the only one of the earliest Buddhist schools surviving today. Its texts are preserved in the Pali language. This is a book of exploration and discovery. We will explore the essential elements of meditation, from beginning mindfulness to the deeper stages of concentration and insight, learning how to cultivate and strengthen them, and how to bring them together in our practice. We will discover the greatness of our capacity for wisdom, love, and kindness as we open to deep states of calm, clarity, and peace. Meditation is not something mysterious or complicated. Meditation is accessible and practical. Its benefits are available for anyone interested in discovering what it may have to offer. Its practices and techniques are simple to do. Meditation is about learning how to live peacefully with quiet minds and open hearts. All the things we may have heard about that can come from meditation, wisdom, peace, and calm, we can realize for ourselves. Buddhist meditation comprises a variety of practices for calming our mind and increasing awareness of our thoughts, moods, and emotions. Being more aware of our experience offers the chance for meeting any situation in a more balanced way. We have the possibility to respond wisely when we can be more fully present and less reactive with whatever happens. We learn to move through all the ups and downs of life with balance and an inner sense of well-being. Why meditate? You may be drawn to meditation for many reasons. You may be looking for a way to manage your stress and feel more peaceful and calm. Perhaps you want to quiet your mind, which is scattered all over the place, to stop obsessing and learn to relax. Or you are dealing with chronic pain or illness or any other challenging situation that is hard to endure, and you are looking for tools to help. Sometimes we don't know exactly what we are looking for, but we know we are suffering or struggling in some way and have heard that meditation might help. All of these benefits are available to us. Peace and joy may seem distant, but they are in actuality not so far away. They are within each of us, but we must turn our attention inward and come to know ourselves. With practice, your mind will become trained and a natural sense of calm and contentment will follow. The ultimate goal of Buddhist meditation and teachings is to guide us toward a non-reactive equanimity and inner peace in the midst of all aspects of our lives. Beyond the importance and benefit of fostering the valuable skills of stress reduction, pain management, and relaxation, On a more fundamental level, Buddhist teachings are asking us to make a shift in how and where we look for happiness, with far-reaching and profound consequences for our well-being. Buddhist meditation is a mosaic of wise and skillful means for cultivating wholesome qualities of our hearts and minds, enabling us to live and act in ways that create more happiness and less suffering for others and ourselves. We can learn to respond skillfully to any situation with wisdom rather than reactivity. As we move about our daily lives with increasing open-heartedness and calm, we can meet our difficulties and learn to work with them. The Buddha's teaching. Buddhism is a down-to-earth, practical teaching. It is not interested in metaphysics or philosophy, but rather in concrete steps we can apply directly to our life. The Buddha was inviting us to take an honest look at our life situation and ourselves. He was helping us find a way to lasting peace and happiness in the midst of life as it is. The Buddha's teachings, known as Dharma, offer a framework for understanding our world and ourselves. Though these teachings can seem complicated or imposing, their essence is expressed in a concise yet comprehensive formula, the Four Noble Truths. The first noble truth is that life involves suffering, that life contains an unavoidable element of uncertainty and stress. One of the most misunderstood of all Buddhist concepts is the teaching on suffering. Many people believe the Buddha taught that life is suffering, but this is a misconception. Buddhism acknowledges the obvious fact that life contains both happiness and misery, pleasure and pain. It is not that there is no happiness to be found in this life. Getting happiness by having more of what we want and getting rid of experiences we do not like certainly bring their own rewards. But those rewards are not enduring. No experience will give us a stable, secure sense of satisfaction because everything is constantly changing and nothing is going to last. Seeking our happiness solely in having or not having certain experiences, we call that a conditioned happiness because it is dependent on circumstances, is a fragile kind of well-being. Even when things are going well, we know that the security and happiness of the moment will ultimately be lost. On some level, we know that life is uncertain, tenuous at best, and that anything can happen at any time. This can leave us feeling uneasy, never really at peace. Because everything is destined to change, we suffer when we cling to anything, when we try to hold on to what cannot last, or fight against our experience when it is not to our liking. This is the first noble truth, that life is uncertain and unreliable. We can appreciate the happiness of the moment, but when the situation inevitably changes, we suffer if we try to hold on to the past we long for or push away the present we wish to be different than it is. We do not suffer if we can learn to let go and be at peace with the ever-changing flow of life. The second noble truth is that the suffering in our lives has a cause. This cause is usually translated as desire or craving. Another common misconception is that Buddhism teaches that desire is bad, that we are supposed to get rid of all desires. But the Buddha stressed the importance of wholesome desire. If you did not desire to understand Buddhist teachings and apply them in your life, you would not be drawn to meditation. Most of us spend most of our time striving to get or hold on to most of those situations, people, and things we think will make us happy, and avoiding those things we think will make us unhappy. We seek to have more pleasant experiences and fewer unpleasant ones. No one wants to have less of what they want and more of what they don't want in life. When things are not going our way, we can't wait for them to change. And when things are going well, we forget, we become complacent and caught up in our daily affairs, thinking everything will just continue on and on as it has been. But sometimes you get what you want, and sometimes you do not, and sometimes you get what you do not want at all. So the second noble truth is that we create suffering by clinging to things or pushing them away, all because of a particular kind of desire, craving. Through wholesome desire, we are motivated and inspired to seek what is beneficial and good for ourselves and others. When healthy desire turns to craving, We cannot stand to be without those things or to let them go. When we are craving, our desire is so strong that we must have it, keep it, or get rid of it. The third noble truth is that there is an end to suffering. The enlightenment the Buddha discovered is often called a liberation through non-clinging. We can learn to ride the waves, navigating life's inevitable ups and downs, with balance and grace. We can learn to let go of our suffering and live peacefully with quiet minds and open hearts in the midst of all that life gives us. All Buddhist teachings and all the various meditation practices and techniques are aids in service of this goal. In the fourth noble truth, the Buddha laid out a system for how to live and practice in order to cultivate wholesome qualities of our hearts and minds. This system is the Noble Eightfold Path. The first two elements of the Eightfold Path, right understanding, also known as right view, and right intention, make up the wisdom section and entail understanding the Buddha's teachings in order to aim one's efforts in the right direction. The morality or virtue section comprises the next three pieces: right speech, right action, and right livelihood. The final section is the path of meditation, the focus of this book, consisting of right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. The Eightfold Path is a holistic system. Each factor is necessary for and dependent upon all the others. Most of this book focuses on the meditation section of the Eightfold Path, but you cannot bypass the other elements, and they will be incorporated throughout the discussions. Without the wisdom to understand where you are aiming, you cannot reach your goal, so you need right understanding and right intention. And your mind cannot settle down in meditation if you are mistreating others or embroiled in conflict, so you need to establish a foundation of virtue, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. The building blocks of meditation. Meditation aims us toward a more reliable way to find happiness, in which our well-being is not left to chance and life's uncertainties. Meditation is learning to let go of our obsessive tendencies of grasping for things we want and pushing away those we do not like, and to begin to look for happiness in how we can relate to what is happening. We can find peace in any circumstance by letting go of craving and clinging, and by changing how we relate to whatever life brings us. The concept of letting go and non-clinging is simple, but we soon find out that what sounds so simple, letting go of our suffering, is hard to do. To actualize this, we need to train our minds to more thoroughly learn how to let go. Our reactive patterns are strong, and it is so easy for us to get caught over and over in our daily lives. If we say, "Do not cling to things or push anything away," perhaps we can do it in a given moment, but as soon as the right experience finds us, the particular causes and conditions arise, we are caught once again in our habitual reactive patterns. This is the place for meditation. There are many meditation practices, and they all aim to develop the key qualities of loving kindness, compassion, mindfulness, concentration, and insight. Loving kindness and compassion. A balanced meditation practice, as well as a balanced life, is built upon a foundation of kindness and compassion. Some people find their hearts opening naturally as mindfulness, concentration, and insight grow. For others, it is helpful to devote part or all of their practice to developing such kindness and compassion. Compassion for ourselves supports us in difficult times when we are struggling to find a way to let go. Compassion for others helps us relate to them with empathy and kindness instead of reactivity and aversion. We learn how to engender kind thoughts and feelings, and how to work skillfully to let go of negativity, seeking to suffuse a compassionate attitude into our meditation and our lives. Mindfulness. Meditation begins with mindfulness. I define mindfulness in a simple way as not being lost on automatic pilot. Mindfulness means knowing whatever is happening rather than being caught up in your experience. It means being aware of yourself and your surroundings, not just going through the motions, unaware of what you are doing. Being mindful means being awake to and fully present in any moment. You can be mindful of anything. You can be aware of your thoughts and moods, what is happening in your body, and what is going on around you. When you know your emotions without being entangled in them, you are able to make wise choices in how to respond to situations. You gain a balanced perspective that allows for greater freedom in meeting the flows of life's ups and downs. Becoming more aware of your own experience of what is happening in your mind and body also helps foster a greater understanding of what other people are going through. You can notice those around you and how you are interacting with them. Having some space between your experience and your response to it opens you to greater possibilities and choice in how to act. Recognizing your mental and emotional patterns, you can begin to shift habitual behaviors. In this book, we will explore various ways to use and direct your attention in a purposeful way to strengthen concentration and insight. The first meditation practice I will offer is called Mindfulness of Breathing. This practice will help you learn how to connect with your breathing so that your mind will grow more steady, more calm, and less distracted. Concentration. Through the proper use of mindful attention, you will learn how to compose and settle your mind, developing the quality of concentration. To be concentrated means your awareness is calm, collected, and undistracted. To be undistracted means your mind is not constantly wandering. You can direct your focus where and when you want and keep it there. A concentrated mind is amazingly clear and perceptive, beyond what is normally accessible. With a steady, undistracted awareness, mindfulness can penetrate deeply and subtly as you turn your attention inward. A concentrated mind is described as being rid of impurities, bright, free from blemishes, flawless, pliable, adaptable, steady, and composed and collected. It is with this quality of mind that we turn toward insight. Insight. We do not need the Buddha to tell us about suffering and stress. We know all about it. What we do not know, and what we need help with, is what to do about it. This is where insights can really help us. A lot of emphasis is put on insight in Buddhist meditation. Insight means understanding the way things are, including life's uncertain and impermanent nature, and acknowledging and making peace with life on its own terms. We come to understand the inner workings of our mind and the nature of our body as it ages. Insight blossoms as we connect with and come to know ourselves deeply and intimately. Increasingly, as mindfulness and concentration grow, we are able to clearly and directly perceive ever subtler places of reactivity, their causes, and the way to let them go. We can see our habitual patterns and tendencies that lead to stress. We know when we are caught in these patterns and tendencies and understand how to let go of stress through non-clinging. In the Buddha's path of awakening, we seek to strengthen mindfulness and steady our minds in order to more clearly see things the way they really are. How to do this is the subject of this book. Paths of Meditation. The various meditation practices all belong to one of three main branches of the meditation family: insight meditation, concentration meditation, and concentration and insight integrated as a single style of practice. Concentration and insight are both important in all these meditative paths. Because there is not just one way meditation is practiced and taught, there can be some confusion about how these two aspects of the practice fit together. Insight meditation is often viewed and taught as a practice separate and distinct from concentration meditation. In this understanding, insight is equated with mindfulness, the present moment awareness of what is happening. In the path of insight meditation, Vipassana in Pali, you apply mindfulness to meet your moment-to-moment experience without any special effort devoted to cultivating concentration. Some degree of concentration will develop naturally as you sustain your attention on the array of experiences coming and going during the meditation session. By paying attention to what is happening in each moment, you begin to clearly perceive and have insight into where you are clinging to or fighting against your experience. You start to learn how to meet difficulties and work with your suffering wisely. Meditators practicing in this style may not be concerned with developing the deeper stages of concentration, feeling that however much concentration naturally develops through mindful attention to their changing experiences is sufficient. In the path of concentration meditation, you are concerned with the attainment of meditative states of highly undistracted awareness. Concentration meditation primarily seeks to calm and steady the mind. Some degree of insight develops naturally as a result of being so undistracted, but the emphasis is on attaining deep stages of concentration known as jhana. We will explore jhana in depth in a later chapter. Those meditating in this way feel that refining their ability to remain undistracted enhances insight, and so they may turn to practices of insight meditation only after developing concentration to a high degree. In this book, we are going to explore the third branch of meditation, in which concentration and insight are brought together as a single path of practice. In this style of meditation, concentration and insight are given equal emphasis. The aim is to develop the deeper levels of each, keeping both in mind at every step. How to use this book. The practice presented here synthesizes mindfulness, concentration, and insight into a single integrated path of meditation practice. I will offer specific guidance for cultivating both insight and concentration. This book will help you find the approaches and techniques that work best for you, offering a range of instructions for working with various possibilities of what can happen in meditation. Although no book can address every possible experience you can have in meditation, I will discuss the most common experiences that tend to arise as the meditation process unfolds, as well as a range of techniques suitable for dealing with those experiences. Your task will be to engage in the various practices as best you can and see what results you get. What you do next will depend on your experience from the previous practice. We do not want to bounce around from one thing to another, but we do want to remain receptive to see if something really is not working and to be ready to let it go and try something else. This book is designed for both beginning and experienced meditators. Even if you are experienced, I suggest reading the first couple of chapters to get a sense of how concentration and insight can come together as one path. If you are new to meditation, see what practices you are drawn to. Some will resonate with you. Give them a try. Some you will not relate to at all. Let those go. If you do not know or have a sense of which practice to use, pick mindfulness of breathing and stay with that for a while. With time and with experience, you will come to know what works and what does not. In subsequent chapters, I will talk about how to proceed depending on what happens as your meditation practice develops. You should not expect to be an expert meditator in a single day. When learning anything new, it can take patience and perseverance to see results. Do not be surprised and do not be hard on yourself if you find it is not easy to sit quietly with yourself. Through repetition and some degree of trial and error, we go from those clumsy first steps to a sense of proficiency and ease. I am often asked how much time you should devote to meditation. The answer is however much you are inclined to do and your life circumstances will allow. Many people find that beginning with 15 to 20 minutes a day is a good way to start. Once you have gained some experience, try sitting a little longer, perhaps half an hour. See how that works for you. Some people work their way up to 45 minutes or an hour or more, or sit more than once a day. In general, as with anything you wish to develop, the more time you give to meditation, the more you will get out of it. Just do the best you can. Any amount of time spent sitting quietly will be of benefit. As you begin, take some time to reflect on your aspirations and intentions for undertaking these ancient practices. You would not be drawn to meditation and Buddhist teachings if you did not want to live with more clarity, calmness, wisdom, and compassion in a way that creates less suffering and more well-being for yourself and others. Keeping your good intentions in mind will be a great support through all the ups and downs of a meditative life as you begin this journey of awakening, following in the Buddha's footsteps. Chapter 1. Establishing the Foundation for Meditation. Meditation comprises a wide array of skillful means. There are many meditation practices to choose from. Even if we all undertook the same meditation practice, regardless of what that practice entailed, we would have our own individual experiences. Though we have many things in common, we are also unique, and meditation unfolds differently for each of us. As a result, how best to work and what is needed in order to proceed at each step will be different for each of us. There is no single right or best technique or approach that is suitable for everyone, and so no instruction will be appropriate for all of us in all circumstances, no method universally effective or desirable in all situations. What is most useful for one person in dealing with a particular situation or experience may not prove useful for the next person and may actually be counterproductive. Concentration and insight, and all the various meditation practices and techniques for developing them, rest upon the foundation of mindfulness. Mindfulness means being aware of whatever is happening in any given moment. When you are angry or worried or stressed, you know it. When you are happy and at ease, you know that. You know your internal world, the feelings in your body, your emotions, thoughts, and moods, and you are mindful of the world around you. Whatever is happening, you can be mindful of it. In the next chapter, you will learn specific practices to begin applying mindfulness in meditation, starting with mindfulness of breathing. Through the practice of mindfulness, you train your mind to settle and focus by directing your attention purposefully in a skillful way, and your ability to remain collected and stable increases. Being undistracted means your awareness can remain steady without jumping around or wandering away. We use that undistracted awareness to more clearly come to know whatever is happening moment by moment, leading to insight. Practicing mindfulness leads to insight because you are looking directly into the nature of your own mind, body, and all experience. Concentration and insight work together. Each can be a doorway for opening to the other. We must enlist them both, though one or the other may be emphasized at any particular time. If you begin with concentration, you have to employ all the resources and support of mindfulness. You are making your mind steady, collected, and undistracted so that your attention is not scattered. Your perceptions become powerful, and the deepening of insight must follow. If you emphasize insight in your meditation, you use mindfulness to investigate the conditioned and changing nature of your mind, your body, and all phenomena. You cannot help but strengthen and bring to bear the power of a steady mind. You may naturally incline in one direction or the other, but concentration and insight can never really be separated. The more concentrated you are, the clearer and more refined your mind becomes, and, because your awareness is unclouded, insights come on profound levels. A clear, steady awareness illuminates your mind, allowing previously inaccessible and subtle areas of clinging and suffering to be revealed, so that you can see whether or not you truly are resting peacefully in the stream of non-clinging. Your perceptions are not only more subtle because of concentration's penetrative power, their ability to permeate and transform you is greatly enhanced. Sometimes you may choose to lean more on the concentration side, and other times you might emphasize the deepening of insight. And sometimes, meditation will take you in a direction other than what you intended. The emphasis in another direction will emerge on its own. We want to remain receptive to how our experience changes over the course of days or weeks, or throughout a single meditation session, and to be open to letting go of how we think things are supposed to be. As your practice develops, the times when concentration is strong, when the mind is settled, clear, and sharp, and it is easy to let other experiences stay in the background, will increase. During those times, remain simply with mindfulness of your breathing or with other practices I will offer, working skillfully to strengthen the concentration, letting it run as far and deep as it can go. You will have lots of opportunities for insight to develop within the concentration practice, since through the deepening clarity concentration brings, you will naturally become more and more aware of a full range of experiences in your body and states of your mind and heart. There will also be many times when you will not be able to concentrate. Your mind may become dull or scattered, or you may have to deal with hindrances or suffering in some way. Something you do not like will push to the forefront of your awareness, and you will find yourself struggling or tense. you will naturally find yourself on the insight side of practice as you learn how to work in these situations. All of these times when you cannot concentrate, when difficulties arise, as well as the times throughout your day outside of meditation, are rich areas for insight to grow as you learn to meet them with a quiet mind and open heart. Even when your concentration is strong and your mind is clear and bright, you may choose to turn your attention toward investigating your experience, whether it is bringing mindfulness to meet some thought, emotion, or sensation in the body, or specifically looking for the characteristics of any experience, such as how it arises and passes away. In those times, you are choosing to turn toward the insight side of the practice. You do not have to try and figure out when those times are, but can just follow your intuition where it leads you. Dharma practice entails working skillfully with whatever is before you, with what is happening right now, right here in your experience. By remaining attuned to the natural unfolding of meditation, your experience will tell you what is needed, and whether you are on the concentration side of the practice or when the emphasis turns to insight. What does a healthy meditation practice look like? Before starting any practice or technique, we must establish a base of right understanding and right intention and have a basic idea of what our goals are. Bringing a sense of ease to your practice will help you relax into the present moment without overstriving, allowing you to meet and work skillfully with all that can happen in meditation. If you can meet your experience with an attitude of kindness and self-compassion, you will avoid falling into self-criticism or struggle during the times of challenge. Patience prepares you for working with any hindrances that may arise. These are the foundations upon which meditation is built. Balanced effort. In this practice, we are trying both to get somewhere and to go nowhere at all, doing two apparently contradictory things at the same time. Sometimes, Dharma practice is talked about in terms of going nowhere or nothing to gain, so it can seem confusing when we speak of cultivating or attaining meditative states of concentration and insight. These two aspects of practice, progressing along a path and going nowhere, appear to be at odds. You would not undertake anything if you did not want to get something from it. Of course, we want to be more concentrated, more peaceful, more quiet and clear. It's okay to want that. In fact, the Buddha said that the pleasure of concentration should be pursued, developed, and cultivated. This seeming contradiction resolves itself when we understand that we are actually doing only one thing, aiming ourselves in a wholesome direction and at the same time, at each step along the path, resting aware of and present with whatever is happening. We are moving along a path of practice by cultivating and strengthening meditative states and wholesome qualities of our mind and heart, and we do it simply by staying present with and connecting mindfully with whatever is happening, moment by moment. Getting somewhere and going nowhere are both true at the same time. The deeper stages of concentration are not stages of gaining or doing, but profound states of letting go. How can we want something while letting go of desire for it to happen? How can we devote ourselves to a path of progress, pursue it wholeheartedly, without making it an object of craving and clinging? Our task is to learn how to get it, but not grasp for it. As your mind begins to steady and the momentum of concentration builds, you learn to apply yourself ever more skillfully, recognizing more clearly what works and what is not helpful. By remaining mindful and clearly aware, not only of what is happening, but how you are relating to what is happening, mental steadiness and clarity deepen, and you can stay connected with equanimity and ease. Practicing in this way, our goals for developing wholesome qualities of calm, clarity, and peace do not become corrupted into overstriving. We want to apply ourselves well, but not fall away from a peaceful abiding in the present moment into longing for something else. Right effort is non-striving effort. The idea of effort often connotes a sense of hard work and a determined push. I am suggesting another approach, a balanced effort that is skillful and that has nothing to do with striving or straining, and everything to do with ease and relaxation, with maintaining a sense of connecting and allowing within mindful presence. If we think there is something we have to attain, some place we have to reach, or any experience we must get other than the one we are having, we are out of balance. but we are also out of balance and do ourselves a disservice if we become complacent. Knowing when to make effort and when to relax and just allow is an art that can take time and experience to cultivate, and that comes for most people through a certain degree of trial and error. Try to let go of any expectation, resting as relaxed as you can in your present moment experience, and then to practice in a way that naturally leads to deepening. Ups and downs in energy, enthusiasm, and interest all come and go. At times, you may notice a real decrease in wanting to meditate. Sometimes, you will be motivated, and sometimes you may be bored, even with pleasant meditative states. We can experience inspiring states of meditation and then feel bogged down in aversion or resistance. When you hit a wall, sometimes the best thing to do is keep meditating, regardless of how you feel. It can be very valuable and important to sit through the hindrances. At other times, it is more skillful to let go of any preconceived form, maybe going for a walk or reading instead. This is different from just following your likes and dislikes. I suggest experimenting with both approaches. If the equanimity and awareness is strong, then it does not matter what the form looks like. Just live in the flow of your experience with a mind of non-clinging. Let your inner teacher be your guide and look honestly at the results. That will inform you what is needed next. Ease and relaxation. It can feel especially demanding when first starting out if you are restless and it is hard to sit still, or if you keep falling asleep, or your body is not used to the sitting posture and hurts. Perhaps you can only manage one or two mindful breaths before becoming so deeply lost in thought that you completely forget about being with the breath for the next 10 minutes. The typical untrained mind is out of control. Just at the time when we are least settled, calm, or peaceful, and when we could use a lot of concentration and stability to help us be present with all these difficulties, we have these qualities the least. Recognize that it takes practice and training for the mind to begin to settle, and, just as with any art or skill, we are not going to become expert meditators in a single day. Proficiency and ability develop over time, yet many of us sit down to meditate and expect our minds to be quiet and peaceful right away. It should not surprise us that meditation can be challenging in the beginning. Our minds are not trained. Reflect on how much time you have spent on automatic pilot, led around by your likes and dislikes with a distracted mind. That is a lot of time training your mind to be scattered and not present. Ajahn Chah, the great Thai meditation master, compared meditation practice with growing a chili bush. He said our job is to prepare the soil, plant the seed, water it, and protect it from insects. That is our whole job. We do our part, and after that, how fast or in what manner it grows is not our business. You cannot pull on the leaves and expect them to grow. Yet, in meditation, we expect the plant to grow, flower, and produce chilies in one day. All you can do is aim yourself in the right direction. How meditation unfolds, how quickly and in what way, is not within your control. Here is where the quality of patience will serve to support you very well. Your job is to practice the best you can, connecting with whatever experience the breath, body, and mind are giving you. You do not have to be better at meditation than you are, and that includes your capacity to let the process unfold and reveal itself in its own way. Patience and the wisdom to not suffer are among the skills you are cultivating by doing your best to let go of struggle and relax into your experience. Ease and relaxation are foundational to meditation practice. We cannot even begin to settle if we are struggling. Consciously beginning by bringing in a sense of relaxation and ease, just the best you can, will help you let go of constriction and tension and take the striving out of the process. Opening to the present moment. Meditation practice is an exploration, a process of recognizing and fostering what is skillful and learning to let go of what is unskillful. If our practice is about learning, then we are not afraid of anything that might happen. We need not worry because whatever happens is teaching us. If we regard every experience as a teacher, we can apply ourselves with an attitude of experiment and inquiry, not judging our meditation in terms of how concentrated we are, as so many of us do, but with interest to find out what is real and true. We can be curious, doing the best we can to meet our experience with inquisitiveness and look to see if what we are doing is helpful or unhelpful. What we learn, we can apply to the next situation. Even falling into struggle is an opportunity for learning. It helps you to realize that you are unable to be equanimous in this situation. Instead of floundering in self-judgment or criticism, merely look to see what happened. Anytime you discover an edge, those things, situations, and experiences you feel you cannot be with, important areas for growth are revealed. Whatever happened is teaching you, giving you information, informing you how to move forward. A big shift came in my own practice when I got just as interested in my suffering as I was in my bliss. As my mind became less distracted, I could see more and more clearly every time something unpleasant or painful would arise and how my mind responded. I began to stop worrying about whether or not I was getting what I wanted and turned to my experience with an attitude of interest and investigation. Let your experience of the moment be your teacher. See if you can turn directly to meet whatever is happening, even if it is painful. That does not mean you have to stay with it, making yourself plunge into something difficult, scary, or distressing if it is too much for you. You have to look and see what is needed, letting however much skill, experience, and wisdom you have show you the way. It may be that you choose to stay right in the fire of an uncomfortable feeling, emotion, or memory, or you may back away, bringing down the intensity to get some relief in order to give you the rest and resources you need. If you are judging yourself or your experience, try your best to stop. Do not make it a struggle to stop struggling, but try to let it go as best you can. Sometimes it is not so easy, in which case you are learning something about conditioned patterns of tension and stress that may be deeply habituated. You may need to inquire and investigate what is fueling the tendency to hold on to some painful reaction, even when you see that it is creating more suffering. Relaxation, ease, and patience will be your allies as you learn to let go of struggle and begin to meet yourself with kindness, compassion, and a sense of exploration and experimentation. Your practice is to study and learn about yourself, and nothing need be excluded. Everything is an opportunity for learning. We tend to judge our meditation by how pleasant or unpleasant it is. When the practice is to our liking, when it feels good and we are getting what we want, we call that a good meditation. When the present moment is not how you have decided it should be, when it seems to go badly or fall apart, check to see what you have found out about yourself, about how your mind works, and about the places you get stuck. See if there is something you can let go of that is unhelpful. How can you build on what you have learned? If you can let go of judgment and contention, shifting your attitude from always seeking what you want and avoiding what you do not want, you can begin looking at what happens with interest, discerning what you can cultivate that is skillful and what is unskillful that you can let go. In the late 60s and early 70s, it was common to see posters around the San Francisco Bay Area of the Indian guru Mera Baba with his big grin and bushy mustache and the simple caption, "Don't worry, be happy." That was in the early days of my meditation practice. I remember thinking that it was a nice sentiment, like something you might say to children, but not really all that deep. It was only much later that I was able to appreciate Mera Baba's deceptively simple teaching. As you reflect on your meditation practice and how it is going, take a few moments right now to let the words soak in and notice how they land for you. Don't worry, be happy. In beginning any practice, it is helpful to try to let go of expectations. Of course, we would not take up a practice if we did not expect some results. But results come more quickly and with less suffering if you can practice in a way that allows you to be at peace and happy where you are, even as you aim toward a goal. Be as happy and relaxed as you can. Feel the freedom in the moment while practicing in a way that heads in a skillful direction. Sometimes it may feel like you are working very hard, but even in those times, you can learn to rest and relax. Check if there is any tension or constriction in your body. Try to relax those areas. Do you find some sense that you've got to change your experience? See if you can let that go and relax into whatever is happening. This is right effort, being fully in the present while naturally heading toward more peace, clarity, and awareness, getting somewhere and going nowhere. After a few months on one long retreat, I complained to the teacher that I had not yet reached Jhana, which I had previously attained by this point. At that time, I had already begun meditating for more than 30 years, having set many retreats of various lengths, along with a strong daily practice. I had attained Jhana in about 4 or 5 weeks of intensive meditation, so going into this retreat, I thought, this is going to be great. I'll be in Jhana in a month or two at the most, and then proceed from there to even deeper stages of concentration, insight, and liberation. The teacher asked if I could be perfectly happy and at ease if I never attained Jhana again, and kindly pointed out that real freedom is not found in attainments, but in non-clinging to whatever is happening. I remember answering with something like, "Yes, of course that is true, but in order to deeply realize that fact, I've got to get," and then proceeding to suffer and struggle for some time more. I'd had it all planned out. I knew that any time the thought, "I've got to get," comes up about anything, it is a setup for suffering. But what had been a wholesome aspiration had become hijacked by my greedy mind. All the parts of yourself and all the patterns at work in your life come with you as you begin to meditate. Just as we are liable to suffer when we do not get what we want in the course of daily life, even with the most sincere intentions, we can fall into worry, stress, or fear as the meditation process unfolds. This is all part of the learning process as we get to see how our minds work. You do not have to be free from patterns of negativity in order to begin meditation, but you do need the tools to work with whatever meditation presents. Working with hindrances. You cannot meditate without any problems or difficulties ever arising. From time to time, all of us will be troubled by sleepiness, restlessness, worry, desire, aversion, or doubt, and we need to find ways to navigate these challenges when they assail our minds. When engaging in any form of meditation, mindfulness is the way to deal with these hindrances effectively. Often, we cannot simply concentrate or focus our minds to push through problems. Through meditation, we are cultivating a stable, clear awareness that bolsters our inner resources to meet these hindrances. When concentration is strong and our minds are settled, there are not so many distractions, and if unpleasant experiences do arise, they do not bother us. When concentration is quite strong, the hindrances cannot arise at all. Concentration suppresses the hindrances, but until it is well developed, we need to find ways to set the hindrances aside enough to be able to get into concentration and jhana. When the concentration is not strong, there is a range of skillful means, various approaches and techniques for dealing with hindrances. Often, just being mindful that a hindrance has arisen is enough to loosen its grip and enable us to let it go. Experiences become hindrances only when they are stronger than our ability to meet them with equanimity. There is something about their quality that catches our minds. They become problems that we tend to struggle with and get caught in. When we are mindful and clearly aware of what is happening, we are often able to meet the same challenges with a calm, non-reactive presence. Sometimes, mindfulness alone will not be enough to enable us to act effectively when we encounter problems. At such times, we must find other ways to work with them. We may need to find ways to bring down their intensity if they are too strong for us, or to suppress them or let them go. Antidotes are ways of directing our attention in order to release a hindrance or have it fade away. If we are holding on to something pleasant, sometimes reflecting on impermanence, reminding ourselves that this experience will not last, can help us let it go. Conversely, if we are aware of something unpleasant and are experiencing aversion, perhaps consciously bringing some loving kindness to the situation, to ourselves, or to whatever the object is, can help. In dealing with sloth and torpor, we can look for ways to increase our energy. You may need more rest. A nap could help. Or try standing up during the meditation, open your eyes and take some deeper breaths. If you are restless with your mind scattered and unable to focus, try bringing up the effort more. Or you may need to take a walk or do some other kind of movement to help get the excess energy out. Doubt, which can be the most insidious of the hindrances, colors our perception and undermines our ability to discern that a hindrance has arisen. We are liable to become identified with the doubt, believing our thoughts that the practice does not work or that we cannot do it. We may need to talk with a friend or teacher to get a more objective perspective, or to spend time with a Dharma community, whether in person or with a virtual community online, or to read inspiring books or listen to talks. Find whatever supports you.